This is Trident Talk.
Swing, sock, way deep out to left field, catch a ball.
From foul pole to foul pole.
Reaches up, dives, and he makes the catch. Holy smokes.
A deeper look at your Seattle Mariners on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
That's right, it is that time of the week. It is time for a fresh new episode of Trident Talk. This week coming to you from beautiful Fenway Park. Aaron Goldsmith alongside Gary Hill. Matt Nelson way back home for us inside of the studio. G-Man, I got to tell you, dude. You know, there are certain venues in all of sports where they get hyped, right? Maybe they get overhyped, and then you go there and you're like, okay. Yeah, it's good. But, you know, I feel like it was oversold. This is not one of those places.
Oh, 100%. You're absolutely right on that, because there are places where in your mind the expectations rise so high that it's impossible for those expectations to be met. And forever as a kid, thinking about the great ballparks in this game. I mean, Fenway Park, where it lived in my mind, there's no way it could be matched, right? Yet, it's matched. And not only that, the other amazing part about it, no matter how many times I am here, I find it amazing and fun every single time. It never gets old coming here. I love it.
That's a great point. And it does change. I mean, they have made improvements to it over the year. It's not like it's completely static. It is baseball's oldest ballpark. The Mariners here for four games, and it is one of a kind, truly. Wrigley is in the same stratosphere, of course. It's kind of a choose whichever one you prefer type of situation. We come here certainly more often than Wrigley. They're both gems of the game, but Fenway is completely one of a kind. This is one of our favorite stops each and every year. Boston, a fantastic city. And the Mariners wrapping up the road trip today. What has been a lengthy three-city East Coast journey. And Gary, we've got another fine award-winning Trident Talk lined up. One thing that we're going to discuss at the end of the program is something that you and I have casually discussed, maybe even bickered about over the years.
Yeah, we've had our disagreements.
Yeah, and that is best game-winning songs in baseball. Every team has a song that they fire right away after a W. We're gonna rank some of those.
It's part of the joy of our job as we get to experience different ballparks and all the things that happen in different ballparks. And we have this conversation all the time about best songs, best winning songs. And not to give anything away, there's a reason we're talking about this in Boston.
That's right.
Yeah.
They've got a good one here. Hopefully we don't hear it later today, although it is a good song. Hey, coming up also on the program, Gary catches up with Malcolm Rogel, who is the newly minted VP of Fan Experience for the Mariners, Gary. And among other things, Malcolm's going to tell us what that means.
He's going to tell us what that means. Also, I was curious, given his job, what's his game day like?
Oh, yeah.
What does he do? So he tells us. It involves a lot of walking. He says 5 to 7 miles, which
is impressive. That is impressive. My goodness. New pair of shoes for every home stand. We've all enjoyed watching Eugenio Suarez play, Mariners' new third baseman, and he's just a wonderful person as well. Good conversation with Suarez coming up later on the program. He had a chance to catch up with Shannon Dreher. Fun stuff there. But right now, we dip into the archives. We were reminded of this conversation when we walked into the visiting radio booth here at Fenway Park the other day, and we saw the same hockey stick. Yes, this is the only booth in baseball that has an honest-to-goodness hockey stick hanging on the wall for who knows what reason. But years ago, we were here and also happening to be here broadcasting the Stanley Cup Finals when the Bruins were in it was the legendary Doc Emrick. Dare I say the Vin Scully of the NHL?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Doc has since retired, and we trust he's doing very well putting his feet up. But he is legendary in the game of hockey. We kindly asked him if he would swing by and join us on the pregame roundtable. And here is one of our favorite roundtable conversations in the last few years, the one and only Hall of Famer, Doc Emrick.
Smith tipped on out to center, brought on by Zetterberg, moving up with Alfredson, 2-on-1. Zetterberg, fed one across, they score!
Yager has it positioned away by Malkin, but just fought it right back to Marchand. Marchand delayed now, tucked it in front, score! Carlson off Ward, kept alive. Letty a shot, all directed on goal. Score! Tavares!
Well, this is as great of a treat as we might have all season long as we are opening up this weekend series from beautiful Fenway Park in Boston, Massachusetts, and we are joined by one of the great legendary voices of any game. He is the voice of hockey. He is the Hall of Famer. Doc Emmerich is with us here in the visiting radio booth at Fenway Park. Doc, it is an absolute honor and a treat to meet you, and thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh, this is fun for me. I came out to watch a baseball game, and I get to talk to you two guys. I marvel at what you do because your games can be shortened and then added on at another time later in the season, or they can be long and they can go extra innings. And ours are fairly predictable until playoff time, and once in a while they'll go two or three overtimes. But to do this and to become the friendly voices that people long to hear, especially after long winters, I look forward to it every spring. I live near Detroit, and when I hear Dan Dickerson do the first preseason game, it's just like winter has ended again. So I marvel at what all of you do, and I thank you for doing it, because I am a fan of this sport. And I'm here tonight just because we have a night off, and I'm a fan of the sport to watch two teams play. Don't know a lot about either one, but I'll learn by the end of the evening.
You have called so many of the biggest moments in hockey history. Do you have one or two that sticks out over the others?
No, not really. I guess I always go to international games, you know, not far from Seattle and Vancouver. A game that really epitomized me to me what the wonderful sport is about was the gold medal game between Canada and the United States. It meant a lot to both countries. The outcome was in doubt. The goaltender was pulled in the final minute, and the U.S. scored to force overtime, and Canada won in overtime. We had interviews afterward with Sidney Crosby, who scored the goal, and Ryan Miller of the U.S., who allowed the goal. And had it been the other way around, both would have been perfect gentlemen, regardless of the outcome. And I think that told us a lot about the sport and the people that play it. You will have wonderful citizens in your town. They get involved in the community, and you'll just love having hockey players in Seattle.
This, of course, the voice of legendary NHL broadcaster Doc Emmerich, a Hall of Famer. And, Doc, you are known for many remarkable things behind the mic, but one of them near the very top of the list is your use of language. Last year, as you well know, there was someone who logged 153 different ways that you described the puck being passed. Angled, blasted, bounced, brought, brushed, carried, fires, flag, flew, lays, shooting, slipped, slug, spiked, yanks, whistled, went, jammed, landed, moving. How do you come up with all this?
I don't really plan it, and I don't write anything down. It's just it's the way I talk. And as I mentioned to you earlier, It is the way I talk. Our dogs don't understand it. I try to keep the commands simple with them. But it was the way my language evolved, and I've been doing it 46 years. And I was once advised by an announcer in Dayton who recently passed, Lyle Stieg, who did some broadcasting for the Washington Capitals, that if you could come up with a different way of saying the many repetitive things that happen in hockey. A different way, because they happen so many times, that would probably prevent people from wanting to strangle you through the radio. And so that was what I did. And there's no contrivance about it. It's just the way I react to the play that I've seen. It was called to my attention today that I used pitchfork last night. It's a Green Acres thing where it's a movement of the puck being pitched high in the air like you would do on a farm. And it only happens once or twice in a game, so it only gets used once or twice in a game.
The game is so fast, Doc, but you make it sound so seamless. What are the biggest challenges of doing a National Hockey League game?
I think it's the geometry of it, but it's also the advantage. And I think that especially hockey is the easiest of the four major sports to call. And I think yours is the hardest because you have so much time in between pitches. I know the clock that I saw in operation down in Bradenton in the preseason may lessen that if it winds up being adopted permanently. But yeah. We're usually calling continuous action. And so you're describing what's happening in front of you most of the time rather than having to supply those stories that you are constantly working on and bringing to the audience like myself. So I think that part of it is easy. I think the challenge is probably the geometry, but the good thing is that the players at our level are the best and you don't have too many surprises. They make pretty much flawless plays, and so you don't get surprises like I did for 7 years in the minors where there were more mistakes.
It's fast. Yeah. Some of the names can be tricky, but you're the president of the NHL pronunciation guide. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that was until they turned it into an electronic guide back during the first lockout. People sat around during the lockout and had a lot of time to think, and they thought, you know, this is another thing that we can do to improve things. So, yeah, our game is an international game, very much like baseball is now. And so many of our players come from Europe. At one time when I first started, it was about 95 to 96% Canadian, and now it's less than 50%. About 15 to 20% United States, and the rest come from various parts of the rest of the world. So it is a universal game, and so we do have some challenges. And oftentimes the European players will say, I don't care how you say it. Well, we usually come back at them by saying, well, we care, and I'm sure your family cares.
Our final moments with Doc Emmerich. Doc, obviously you are a baseball fan. What did baseball mean to you when you were growing up?
I played it every day. My brother and I were baseball fans, and folks like yourself were a part of our life because we made scoreboards out of plywood and drove nails in inning by inning, like the scoreboard that you'd see at Wrigley Field or at Forbes Field in Pittsburgh, and we would turn the radio on. Daytime, we would get the Cubs because at that time they played all their games during the day. Yeah. And then at night, we would go up and down the dial. Now, we were rural Indiana, and so we would get all of the 50,000-watt stations that were carrying games, and we would hang the inning-by-inning scores as we heard them on St. Louis stations in Detroit and Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, all the common carrier 50,000-watt stations that we would get. And then at the end of the day, we'd go to bed, and some of the games wouldn't be over, but the next day we would clear the board off, and we would start all over again. And we would play games in the yard and make out lineup cards each day, and whoever was at bat would announce, and whoever was in the field would chase the ball. And I have to say this, we were Midwestern guys, and in our games, the New York Yankees never won.
I like it. So when did you fall in love with hockey?
Age 14, I saw my first game live, and I think that's probably what will hook people in Seattle if they've never seen a game live the first time they see it. It will either hook them or not, because when you see it live with all of the color and all of the speed and everything that happens, that's what does it to you. And I saw a minor league game in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and that hooked me. And from that point on, instead of wanting to be a baseball announcer like yourselves, I wanted to announce hockey.
What was it like calling a Pirates game, though? You've called a baseball game.
Yeah, Bob Costas had learned that maybe one of the things on that cursed phrase, the bucket list, was to do one Pittsburgh Pirates inning. And he called me the next day after he'd heard that, and he said, next summer we'll make it happen. And so he said, we'll waive all integrity. You can cheer for your team. It's an MLB Network game, but you can cheer for your team. And I think the Pirates played the Cubs 18 times that year, only won four, but we did win that one. And he let me take the last three outs because we were in a position to win, and so we did.
Doc, this has been an absolute thrill of a lifetime.
Well, thanks. It's
Thank
fun
you
to
so much for coming and talking with us.
Yeah. Fun to meet you, Rick, because I got a chance to listen to you when you were working with Ernie in Detroit.
It was a
great time, and I'm so glad that you guys are devoting your lives to baseball because it makes our lives better listening to you. I don't know how many times I've had the radio on every day when I go for a walk, and I've told Dan Dickerson this in Detroit. He and Jim Price are helping me live a better life because I go out for 3 miles and I walk and I listen to the game on my headset.
Well, that lived up to the hype, I trust. Doc Emmerich is just an absolute gentleman, a pro's pro, one of the all-time great sports broadcasters in television history. And we were so thankful that he was kind enough years ago to swing by the booth and hop on the round table with us. Trident Talk is just getting off the ground. It's brought to you by the Chevy Silverado and Silverado HD. When we come back, we're joined by Mariners third baseman Eugenio Suarez on the Alaska Airlines Mariners Radio Network.
You're listening to Trident Talk on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
Pride and Talk continues from gorgeous Fenway Park. The Mariners wrap up the series and the road trip. We trust you've enjoyed getting to know and watch Mariners' new third baseman, Eugenio Suarez. Good vibes only. He's got a really charismatic personality. And a short while ago, he had a chance to catch up with our own Shannon Dreher. And among other things, talk to her about his very first experience with baseball as a kid.
I always remember my first step on the baseball field was with my daddy. I remember we walked by the ballpark and I saw the kids. This is my dad always told me this history. I walked by the field and I told my dad, like, hey, Dad, I want to be like those guys. That looks good. That looks fine. They enjoy it. I just want to do it one day. So my dad looked at me and said, really? And I said, yeah. So he went like, okay, let's play baseball, me and you together. I want to show you how you catch a ball, how to throw a ball. I was 5 years old when that happened. This is my dad told me this history every time. And I remember my first throw was with my dad on the baseball field. And I got that in my mind for the rest of my life. So that's my first baseball memory that I have.
That's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, you see that all the time now. Kids, you drive by fields, we fly over fields. What do you think when you see them?
I always see a kids. They always ask for signing. I love kids. I love kids. And I have two daughters. They always watch me play. They always yelling at me, daddy, daddy, and I love that, you know, because I feel like that was me when I was young. And you see around in the field, when you see those kids ask for baseball or signing, whatever it is, photo, whatever. I just remember when I was young that I want to be a baseball player, and maybe they think like that way too, you know. And that's great when you see kids on the field watching us play baseball. It's a big honor to be a baseball player for me. Yeah.
When did you have an idea that, you know what, I could do this?
You know, I grew up playing baseball, but when I take the baseball for real, like I told my parents, like I wanna be a professional baseball player. It was when I was 14 years old that I start like taking the baseball serious. Like I want to play like professional baseball. I want to sign. One of my friends signed with the Toronto Blue Jay like before me, and I told my dad I want to play baseball, I want to sign it, I want to be a professional baseball player. And from that 2000 I was 14 years old, and from that I just start play, like, you know, I went to the academy and I start play more like serious baseball, and I take that for real. And And I signed it when I was 17, so it took me 3 years to sign the baseball.
Oh, so you're persistent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I started playing for real when I was, like, you know, I always play baseball. We had a team, like travel team and all that stuff. But I take it serious when I was 14 that I told my dad and my mom that I want to be a professional baseball player. So,
did you watch games? Did you have a favorite player?
Yes, I do. Actually, my favorite baseball player is Omar Vizquel. Hmm. I grew up watching him play shortstop. That was my original. I grew up and my first when I got called up was as a shortstop. So I always play shortstop. So yeah, Omar was my favorite player. Yeah,
definitely a big hero back home.
Yes,
I'm
know
sure.
that.
Now, I was looking at where you were born, and I forgot what it was called, but I thought I saw a Porta in the. You were born. You're from near the sea, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm born in Puerto Ordaz, in Venezuela. It's close to the water, to Puerto La Cruz, and you know that's why I like that beach. You know, I like to be in the water. So.
Okay. Do you like to fish? Do you like to swim?
I like fishing a lot. Yeah. One of my when I got free time back in Venezuela, when I live in there, me and my brothers always go fish Okay. We always went to fishing, and yeah, that's what that one of the thing I like to do.
Fishing. You have a big fish story?
I don't think I got a big one. I mean, I'm not really good one, but I got, you know, not medium size, not mm-hmm. a big one. My brother, my younger brother, he always, almost every weekend he goes fishing, so oh, okay. he's very good. He's better than me.
So would you be up for like some Northwest, like some salmon fishing or yeah. some fly fishing or some bass?
I mean, we got bass in okay. Venezuela, in my hometown. Uh-huh. We got bass, so that's pretty much we got in there, yeah.
All right, there's some fisher people up in, yeah. in the Seattle area. You might be able yeah. to sneak out.
Okay, I would love
point.
To do it, yeah.
we know some people.
yeah, I would love to do it at some point. I get here, the first time I got here in Seattle, the clubhouse, everybody, you know, like, open hands. Mm-hmm. They give me, you know, like, I feel the real feeling, like, when you get somewhere and they love you and they like you, they want you. And for me, that's all. The game is always going to be the game. Mm-hmm. That never changes. Yeah, I give my best to Cincinnati. They give me the best to me, to my family. But it is what it is, and now I represent Mariners Seattle. Yeah.
So you came up in the Tigers organization.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at your first club, and, man, you had some players on that club.
Yeah, you know, my first year in 14, we got a Tony Horner in left field. We got Austin Jackson in center field. We got J.D. Martinez in right field, Miggy first, Victor Martinez, DH, Ian Kiesler, mm-hmm. you know, all those guys. Pitching, we got Verlander, yeah. we got Mark Churchill, yeah. Aníbal Sánchez, David Price. So we got pretty good. I mean, I was the younger guy on the mm-hmm. team, the rookie guy, and I learned so much from them, the way they working, the way mm-hmm. they prepare to the game. And I think that was very awesome when I got that call up. I can't believe it because, you know, I wasn't the big prospect. So I just played my way. I play hard every time. And you know, be available to play with those guys, future Hall of Famers, for me, it's awesome, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a great memory by my first year in big leagues.
Miggy's got to be one of the most popular players in the game. I've never, any time the
oh,
Mariners
yeah,
go
of
there.
Course. I think he's the biggest, I mean, for sure, he's the biggest Venezuelan player in big league, you know. So
yeah.
See Miggy, you know, learn working with him and, mm-hmm. and see how he doing in big league, for me, is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's a great person. Really appreciate
yeah, really
him
good
a
guy
lot.
Too,
yeah.
yeah.
And now you're here, and you can do so much for this team.
Yes.
It's you look at the numbers, and you see crazy home runs, and you mm-hmm. look at some years, and there's some strikeouts too. And then I watch you, and I'm like, you're very hitterish. you know how to hit,
yeah.
and you know how to take a walk, and mm-hmm. you have had some very good seasons. When you are at your best, who are you at the plate? What are you trying to do?
When I'm my best, I just try to put a ball in play. I just want to use the middle way field, or use the old field. I don't want to try homers, hit a homers every time. Oh my sabbath. I never think about hit a homers. I know that I can't hit a ball out the field, and I can't hit a homers, but I don't try to hit homers. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to strike out. I just want to, the last 2 years, my strikeout percent get high. Maybe it's just because I maybe try to hit ball hard that I can, but it's not my game. My game is put a ball in play, mm-hmm. use the middle away. I know when I got the power to hit a homer, so mm-hmm. everybody know that, but you know, when I'm at my best, that's what I try to. And right now in the spring training, I don't try to strike out. I don't want to strike out much like last 2 years. But this year, my goal is not, you know, putting my strikeout percent down and, mm-hmm. you know, put a ball in play the most I can and see what happens at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. That's it.
You're a hitter who hits home runs.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's like that, 100%. I know that when I hit a ball good in the air, mm-hmm. I got a chance to hit a homer. everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I won this year.
All right. And the last question for you, what are you most excited about in starting the season with the Mariners?
I just can't wait the fans. Again, I want to see the fans support us. We got a really good group. We got a really good team, and our mentality is just make it a postseason and then go by step by step and win the ring for a city that just have they're hungry for that ring. They're hungry for a World Series, and that's what is the more important to me right now. It just I just can't wait to put everything together, see the lights on, and play baseball in Seattle.
We're looking forward to it. How are the vibes?
Good vibes only. Right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Our thanks to Shannon Dreher and Mariners third baseman Eugenio Suarez, one of our favorite guys to catch up with. Well, Trout and Talk is brought to you by Jack's Grill with three locations in Issaquah, West Seattle, and Laurelhurst, known, of course, for the greatest steaks in your neighborhood. For a great dining experience, a friendly family atmosphere, and a friendly price, make plans to stop by your nearest Jack's Grill. Still plenty more to get to here on Trident Talk. When we come back, Gary catches up with Malcolm Rogel, the Mariners VP of Fan Experience. What exactly does that mean? What does Malcolm do each and every home game? It's pretty interesting. That conversation straight ahead on the Alaska Airlines Mariners Radio Network.
You're listening to Trident Talk on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
Well, we're happy to have you with us on Trident Talk from Fenway Park. Mariners and the Red Sox today, the finale of this four-game series. One of our favorite guys in the front office to catch up with is Malcolm Rogel. He's got a new title this year. He is the Mariners VP of Fan Experience. And among other things, Gary Hill began his conversation with Malcolm, learning what exactly this job title entails.
That's great, Gary. I get to basically take the fan from when they leave their house to when they leave T-Mobile Park. So getting to our parking garage, getting through our gates, getting up the stairs, going out and getting their first hot dog, heading down to the seats, everything having to do with the fan experience in the venue, I get to oversee with my team, and it's a lot of fun. I really love it.
You've been with the Mariners for a long time. How important is this to you? How much does this mean to you to have this role?
Yeah, this is really incredible. This is my 24th season with the Mariners. And I've really seen everything, everything from ticketing to parking and food and beverage and moving up and through that business. You know, I really have a passion for what the fan experience is. Mm-hmm. I've raised a family in this building, so I know every level that from little toddlers on up and how kids really love this space and what it does for families. So it's a really great role for me. I really enjoy it, and it's been a lot of fun so far.
And there's a lot new happening at the ballpark, and we'll dive into a lot of it. But there's something that is happening starting on Monday, the walk-off market. Tell us all about the walk-off market.
Oh, well, we've always had a struggle with lines on big games, and so with our food and beverage. And this building was built years and years ago, and our food was not as amazing as it is now. And with our food being number one in baseball and our craft beer being number one in baseball, there's a lot of demand for this awesome product. And we do need to take care of our fans and get them through those lines a little quicker. And one of the ways we're going to do that is with our brand new grab and go called the walk-off market. Mm-hmm. And the walk-off market, what's new and awesome about it is that you will be able to enter by dipping your credit card. And once you're in the market, you're able to grab anything you'd like. You could grab a nice ice cold water. You can head over to the craft beer cave or the domestic beer cave. Maybe you want to get a hot dog or a nacho or a pretzel and then just walk out, literally. It's powered by Amazon's Just Walk Out technology. Everything that you grab is put into your virtual cart. If you don't want that, you just put it back and it goes out of your virtual cart. But once you leave the store, your card is charged for whatever you chose to buy, and you get a receipt in your email. It's pretty fantastic, and it will do wonders for any kind of line queuing or waiting to get your product. We're really excited.
Where's it located?
So the walk-off market opens on Monday, and it is located at Section 126. We took an existing concession stand, cleared it out, made it a big market. It'll be very visible to fans. It has nice bright lights, and it's just really accessible for all of our fans right behind the home plate.
Nice. Tell us about the value menu going on.
Yeah, so new this year is a modification to our popular value menu. We line priced all the items at $3 this year, and it's been a big hit for fans. It's been such a hit that our rolling roofs are some of our most popular stands in the building now. And so we're really modifying the menus at those rolling roofs to get you through and back to the game quicker. But the value menu itself has just been a big hit for fans. You know, the Mariners have always wanted to be, you know, a very good value for the consumer, from our ticket prices on value games to our food and beverage. Having this value menu at $3 for every game, you know, we want it to be completely accessible for every fan in the Pacific Northwest, and this value menu has really achieved that.
Man, I was just thinking about, as you're describing everything, thinking about T-Mobile Park, we're in a stretch where it's 19 of 25 on the road, and I can't tell you how excited we are to get back home and get some games at T-Mobile Park.
Oh, man, join the club, man. We are ready to have you guys back, and we have a big series coming up with Oakland and Houston, and then in June we welcome the Red Sox, the Twins, and the Angels for a big, big homestand, but we're ready to have everybody back when you and your team get back on the plane and head back out to Seattle.
I'm guessing fans have enjoyed free refills as well so far this year. I'm guessing that's been a hit.
Yeah, so our partners at Coke, new this year, we've been Pepsi forever, but Coke came in and they really wanted to make a big splash with our fan experience, and we were right there with them. And so we wanted to turn all of the fountain machines around and allow the fans to kind of, you know, pick the soda they wanted to and kind of come back and get a refill whenever they needed. And we loved that. We loved everything about it. It helps with our lines, again, with just handing the consumer a cup, and then they go out and refill it themselves. And so it's helped on two things. It's helped the fans on the lines. It's helped the fans with selection and choice and value. So we're really excited to partner with Coke to launch this, and it's been a big hit. We've seen a lot of our fan feedback come back saying just how impressed they are with this and how happy they are to be able to just go up and get a refill later in the game when they need to. And you know, we're really happy about the turnaround so far with that.
So on this road trip so far, we have watched Marco Gonzalez dazzle with his changeup. He's outdueled Scherzer. He's outdueled Gosman. Tell me about your changeup. I assume it's just as good.
Well, the one I throw is terrible, but the changeup we're actually launching and we're piloting this year is up on the Terrace Club. It's a really neat concept. It's a stand that allows for our Sodexo team to create a new menu item each homestand that is unique to that homestand, and then it'll rotate every homestand. And so those on the Terrace Club will be able to have a wider variety of selection and choice for their food offerings. And it allows Chef Javier, who's new this year and is amazing, allows him to come out and really bring some of the other ballpark fare to the Terrace Club, which is a distinct area within the ballpark. So the changeup so far has been really well received by the fans. They like that they're able to go and see what's available this week and try something new. And knowing it's coming from Javier and his team, they know it's going to be amazing. So, yeah, if you're on the Terrace Club anytime this next homestand, I encourage you to go check out the changeup. It's located at section 220, and it's pretty awesome.
What is it like for you on a game day, like during the game? You walk around, see what's going on. I assume you don't get to watch any of the game, obviously. You probably have too much going on, but what does it look like?
No, it's really great. And in all my time that I've been at the Mariners, I've never walked so much in my life. So now that this fan experience role, my steps per day is off the chart. So we'll walk, you know, myself and my team and everybody else, you know, you'll walk 5 to 6 to 7 miles during a day. And it's pretty great. You're just getting out. You're seeing what the fans are interacting with. You know, you're encouraging your team and really kind of just understanding the flow of the ballpark and what we can do better. And we take a lot of that feedback back to our team after each homestand, and we dial in how we can improve the fan experience. But it is a lot of walking, so it's really good to be able to go maybe go test that hamburger and then walk it off. So it's pretty great.
Man, get your steps in. That's right, with Malcolm Rogel, the Mariners VP of Fan Experience, and we thank him for taking some time out of his very busy day and putting his feet up, which I'm sure felt nice for him for a change, joining us here on Trident Talk. Well, the program is brought to you by Jack's Grill with three locations in Issaquah, West Seattle, and Laurelhurst. It's known for the greatest steaks in your neighborhood. For a great dining experience with a friendly family atmosphere at a friendly price, make plans to stop by Jack's Grill, one of our favorite places to grab a steak. Well, we got plenty more to get to here on Trident Talk. More coming up. We're going to talk best game-winning songs around baseball. The Mariners have a great one. The Red Sox have a very good one as well. We're going to rank some of our favorites. That's straight ahead on the Alaska Airlines Mariners Radio Network.
You're listening to Trident Talk on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
Right. Now the sweet sound of a Mariners win, fired by Jimi Hendrix. Now, this is something Gary and I, we talk a lot about baseball, and sometimes you can only talk certain baseball things so much. Before the conversation, Gary, it kind of starts going other directions. And for, I would say for years, truly, we've had a conversation of best game-winning songs in baseball.
Yeah.
That's what we play at T-Mobile Park, and it is, that's a 10 out of 10. That's a dynamite game-winning
song. You could almost say it's fire.
You just did. All right, so first, before we start diving into this subject a little bit, we need to set some our sights on what exactly makes for a great game-winning song. And in the case of Jimi Hendrix and Fire, it checks all the boxes.
Yes, for me, it's absolutely. I want a song that kicks, and I want a local angle to it, whether the song is about the city or it's a local artist. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a local angle and a great song.
Yeah, and I think kicks is a great way to put it. It's got to have some juice. It's got to have some spice. It's got to have something that, like, it really it grabs you right away, and it matches the feeling.
Yeah, and that's why I truly think Fire is one of the best in baseball, because it checks those boxes absolutely. And when you have when you can claim Jimi Hendrix as yours, as your city's, you do that.
That's a very good thing.
Yeah.
Well, we, of course, we travel all around baseball each and every year, year after year after year, so we hear a lot of these songs. This is in no particular order. There's a number of songs that we agree on. There are some songs that we're like, what are you thinking, man?
Absolutely. There's, I know there's one that we both agree on, and one we just heard it in person in New York, the New York Mets. I'm back after the New York Blues. It's a good one.
That's a great game-winning song.
Yeah.
Because it has the kick. Obviously, there's a local angle there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty – really, when you boil it down, you would think that it's just easy to have a game-winning song, right? Check two boxes. But it's not that easy.
Apparently not. Not everyone – do you want to hear Washington's and St. Louis?
Oh, yeah. They have the, it's interesting. They have the same song.
Yeah. Here it is.
Okay. Great.
I mean, how do you not have a song?
They don't have a song.
Come on. They don't have a song.
That's a problem.
It is a problem.
We don't condone that type of baseball behavior.
So there are a few. We both agree with that. We both agree with New York Groove. There are some songs that we don't agree on. Like, this is one that I think is one of the absolute best in baseball. I love LA. Yes. The Dodgers win. I love LA. Like, come on. They love it.
So they do love it. I don't dislike that song. Who produced
Randy Newman?
Yeah. You know, I just think of Woody and Buzz when I hear that voice. Like, I feel like Bo Peep is going to be coming around the corner. Okay. I mean, and I love the I love Toy Story music. We listen to it with some regularity. But it's not a bad song. But I have different things that come to my mind other than, you know, like Mookie Betts walk-off home run.
Yeah.
But it's... I mean,
I understand.
You know, you get it?
I think it's great.
I mean, it is. It's a good song. It's a good song. Where do you want to go next here?
Should we go to one of your faves that I am not
I can't believe you don't like this.
It's fine.
Do you find it childish? Do you find it annoying?
No, I just, it's like, I don't know. It just, it feels,
amateurs?
It just doesn't do it for me. Yeah. Well, I do appreciate the fact that it is tradition. The fans love it.
Oh, they get into it.
Everybody sings it. So that part is cool, and I appreciate. I just don't think, like, if we were ranking things out.
We are, in some ways.
Yeah, it would not be in my top five.
Okay, fair enough.
And perhaps not in the top 10. Oh, probably top 10. But
it's ahead of St. Louis and Washington, I can tell you that much.
Well, that's for sure. There's some others I really like. There's Minnesota, I think, is perfect. I mean, Prince is from Minneapolis.
Right there.
Yeah, it's right there. His studio is still there. You can tour it, which I was going to do this year until we had the rain out. So I'm going to do that down the road. But I think that is a great one. I think there's a couple of underrated ones. I think one of them I really like, because there's some history to it, is when the Kansas City Royals win a game.
When I hear this, I just think that there's a platter of barbecue in front of me.
Yeah, it's good.
It has a great KC vibe to it.
You know, what's cool about it, too, there's actually Beatles history in Kansas City. One of the greatest concerts ever in Kansas City. And it had to do with Charlie Finley getting the Beatles to come to Kansas City. So it's not just randomly the Beatles singing about Kansas City. There's actually some connection there, too, which I think is very cool. I also think the Colorado Rockies have, I think, a very underrated one, a local. I mean, Joe Walsh lives in Colorado, or lived in Colorado. He's got, I mean, he's singing about Casey at the Bat in the song. And it's called Rocky Mountain Way.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I see why they went there.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't totally float my boat, but I get it. I'm not put off by it. Do we have one left?
Well, yeah, we have one left, and I think. We both agree that this one is the best in baseball?
By the way, we're not going. I mean, I don't want to say this word, but Yankees. Are we not going there?
Oh, we can. Do you want to do Yankees?
I mean, do you have it?
I do. Give me a second here. I mean, it's really good. I mean, it's Sinatra.
That's the problem, right? I mean, even if, see, it's like, this is where you're torn, because even as Yankee haters. I mean, can you also hate Sinatra?
No. They also, I think they play this when they lose, too. So you can still hear it when they lose, which is great. That's the problem.
Yeah, you have to save it, man.
When you associate it with the Yankees win, that's then, where it's like,
yeah.
No,
it's,
thanks.
It's like, you got to choose one, man.
Yeah. So that one's not as fun. Great song.
Great song.
Just not as fun.
This is a bad association.
Yeah. That's exactly right. One of our favorites we've heard too many times in the last couple of days, I think. But this
gets a little awkward right now.
I know it is, because
we have heard it too much.
Yeah, we've heard it too much.
But it. I'm going to tell you a story.
I'm going to tell you about my town. And when you experience it in person, which unfortunately we have, there's something about when it hits. You know that initial.
Start me over.
Right there, because it hits at the perfect time, at the moment the game ends, when the crowd is erupting, and it's something about the whole atmosphere coming together. And the song is about Boston, even though the band had never been
to Boston.
To Boston.
They were like in L.A.
Yeah, that's right.
They're like, let's sing about that dirty river.
Like, not living in Boston. They've never been to Boston, writing the song. But still, it really works.
Hit me from the top one more time.
You want the right top again?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's something about the way that it takes off. You know,
yeah,
it's not a gradual climb.
It's just
like a bam,
right at the moment.
Yeah.
And whoever's on the button that does it is perfect.
By the way, if you were on the button, wouldn't you be a little afraid that you would, you know?
Absolutely.
Press launch too soon.
That's why I'm really impressed by the perfection of it, because whoever's on the button like hits it at the moment when it easily could be like a drop.
Let's go back last night. I mean, Kike Hernandez made this incredible catch back towards the triangle.
That's right.
That was not a gimme by any means.
No,
and
not at all.
If I was on the button, I would have pushed it, and then he would have dropped the ball.
Then, whoops.
Whoa, 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 fade down. I mean, it's 2 points. You're fired now.
Yeah.
You're fired.
Boston has, like, the Dropkick Murphys after too. They have a whole concert after a win.
It's a whole playlist.
Yeah.
Hopefully it won't happen today.
Absolutely.
Garrett, great job. I know you spent a lot of time on Napster getting all these things, so good downloading and good DJing.
Nice.
Very nicely done. You really do it all. But just to finish where we started, Hendrix and Fire is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're pretty lucky to have that one.
Yeah.
We've got more coming up here on Trident Talk. It's brought to you by the Chevy Silverado and Silverado HD. Back in a moment on the Alaska Airlines Mariners Radio Network.
You're listening to Trident Talk on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
It's brought to you by the Chevy Silverado and Silverado HD. It is a warm, warm day here at Fenway Park. What do we got, Garrett? We got 95 coming today?
Oh, yeah. It's supposed to be 96. It's supposed to be the high today.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's we've had rain, we've had wind, we've had sun, and we've had on top of the sun, which will be today. Day game from Fenway Park, as they say around here, and debatable, but as they say around here, America's most beloved ballpark. This is the
yeah,
oldest.
That actually is everywhere when you look around. Put it everywhere.
TM, what do we got going on here?
Yeah.
This is a truly iconic place in all of sport. Gary, I want you to tell us your experience. One of your first experiences walking into the ballpark as a big leaguer, as a big league broadcaster.
Oh, yeah. It was actually, it reminded me of a day like this because it was super hot. And because usually I love walking to the ballpark. That's one of my favorite things. But it was 100 degrees, and, you know, I wanted to maintain my clothes without. So I am walking out of our hotel, and the bus was parked kind of on the side of the hotel, so you had to leave the doors and kind of walk around. And I happened to be walking out, and Edgar Martinez happened to be walking in front of me. And whenever we're in Boston, there's usually a group of autograph seekers wherever we are. They're hanging out in front of the hotel or around the side, and there was a group waiting as we were kind of making our way around the sidewalk to the bus. And, of course, they see Edgar, who was the part of the coaching staff at the time. And, you know, Edgar's signing away because it's Edgar Martinez, not a Hall of Famer at the time, but on his way to being Hall of Famer, all-time great. And so I'm pretty far back and just watching this happen. I'm just walking, and Edgar signs, and then he gets onto the bus. And I had watched Edgar sign this beautiful baseball bat, and Edgar's signature, the only one on this bat, and he signed it right on the sweet spot. And the guy runs up to me after Edgar had signed it and said, "Will you sign this bat?" And so I spend the next 5 minutes saying, just pleading, like, "You believe me, you don't want me to sign this bat. Edgar Martinez just signed this bat. You don't want me to have any part of this." And he's like, no, I want you to sign this bat. And I'm, please, take it from me. Edgar signed it. Like, I am nobody. I am nobody. You don't want me to sign it. And then it got to a point where I'm like, I mean, I can't say no. I can't be a jerk. And so what I did was I took the bat and I turned it to the back and I signed it on the back. So at least when it's displayed, the Edgar autograph can be beautifully displayed. I was thinking on a mantle above a fireplace, and then mine will be perfectly tucked right behind it, facing the wall where no one would see it. And I don't come off like a jerk denying an autograph when that wasn't the intention, but I really had this person's best interest at heart.
He wouldn't let you go.
He wouldn't let me go. He would absolutely not let me go.
To him, you were Ken Griffey Jr.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and so I did. I feel like I did the right thing in the end.
I think so. I mean,
it still probably brings the value down significantly.
I think obviously the best move would have been just to walk away and hope that he forgets about you. But you're too nice. You're too nice to do that. Even though he had no idea who you were.
Very jerky of me to.
Well, he had no idea who you were. He couldn't aim his jerky hatred towards anyone.
That's true.
But you did the next best thing.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
And I like to think of that bat floating around New England somewhere.
Yeah, it's somewhere.
It'd be passed from generation to generation of some Red Sox fan family.
Who's this?
Well, that'll do it for Trident Talk on this Sunday. Shannon Dreher is coming up with the pregame show. Remember, you can find all the content you hear here on Trident Talk each and every week on the Mariners official baseball podcast. That is Mariners Pod. For Gary Hill, Matt Nelson, I'm Aaron Goldsmith. Shannon Dreher is coming up after this quick break.